Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl, a brand new episode of the Corner Office Podcast coming to you. Thanks for downloading. This time, I'm talking to a woman named Dawn Ostroff. She is the president of Condé Nast Entertainment. Her job basically is to take articles published in Vogue or Vanity Fair or Bon Appetit or The New Yorker, any other Condé Nast title, really, and figure out ways to get it on your TV or your mobile device, what have you. It's a lot of magazine pages to comb through, I'll tell you that. Here it is, my conversation with Dawn Ostroff at Condé Nast Entertainment.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Dawn Ostroff, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
We should say just to start, you work for a big, giant magazine company, but you're a TV person from and radio, actually, from way back.
Yes, I am. But, you know, these days, I think we're seeing everything merging and, you know, content migrating from platform to platform. So it seems like everybody is a little bit of everything these days.
It does indeed. Mm-hmm. So what do you do in Condé Nast and at Condé Nast Entertainment?
So Condé Nast Entertainment was a division that we started 5.5 years ago with the understanding that the landscape in the media space was really changing. And, you know, you need a 360 approach to any kind of content that the company mm-hmm. was making and producing. And so I think they were very forward thinking in looking at how they could start to expand the content that was being written. Mm-hmm. How do we take that onto other platforms? Now, in prior years, they had had many movies made based on some of the articles in the magazines.
Right.
But, you know, the company didn't necessarily participate in the creative process or in the financial.
Yeah, so it was the writer, right, who got the deal.
Yes, and
usually
the writer still does,
yeah.
But it's just as opposed to outside production companies making the movies or the TV
right.
shows, we're now involved in that whole process.
Right.
And in addition to that, digital video was starting to really come to fruition, and we knew that that would be an important part of the business going forward, which it has really turned out to
right.
be. And so we also help oversee all the video content that the company makes and built a network,
right.
for lack of a better word.
Right. So back me up to the creative process for a second. You've got decades and decades and decades and decades of magazine articles that, in theory, you could have some intern plow through and say, hey, this would be a good, you know, TV or a movie or whatever it is idea, right? Is that fundamentally how it works?
Well, we have, I'd say it's estimated 80,000 articles in the archives, which we have gone through and we have cataloged. And then in addition to that, there's new content that comes out every day. Not only on our digital sites,
mm-hmm.
but also obviously still in the magazines. So there's just a plethora of content and stories. And at the core of our company, we really are storytellers. And
right.
so what platform we tell those stories on is really what we have been exploring.
The challenge, I guess, for you now is fundamentally getting people's attention, right? So how do you, when you sit down with a project, how do you say, what do you do to say, listen, we need to get eyeballs on this? How do you do that?
It's interesting. We evaluate the content to understand what the best version of it would be and where it would lend itself on which platform. So, for example, when we look at stories for feature films, many times it's a story that's going to bring in an audience to a movie theater. When you're looking at something that's for television, oftentimes it's really about the characters and the relationship because people have to come back for maybe 7 years,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So you need to have people who are so engaging that people want to come back and hang out with them, so to speak. You know,
yeah,
where
yeah.
the story is really that dynamic because you're watching them inside of the story, as opposed to just seeing a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end as a feature. And the digital video side, we look at some stories as fodder for video content, but we really create franchises, as we call them, from scratch. You know, we just really think about what the medium is and what will work in that space.
Give me an example.
I'll give you an example. So we have a franchise called 73 Questions, which you may or may not have heard of, but we produce it for Vogue, and it's basically taking celebrities in their home.
Yes. It's been a while,
and
yes.
while they are walking around their home,
yep.
our director is
yep.
asking them 73 questions.
Yep.
And what's interesting about it is if you were going to do that idea for a television show, you'd probably do an interview show, and you would probably have Kimmel or Fallon sitting there interviewing somebody, and you as an audience, as a voyeur, watching somebody
right.
else have a conversation. But in video, people expect to have a direct relationship with whoever the celebrity is. So we always make our content where the celebrity is speaking to the camera.
Huh.
And you're actually, you know, seeing something on the inside. In this case, they're in their home.
Uh-huh.
And you're getting access to them that's much more intimate. And so you feel like you know them a lot better than you would if you were just watching somebody else interviewing them. And so all of the content we make in video, which is a lot, we make about 5,000 videos a year. We'll do about 11 billion views this year, which is a lot of people watching content. But everything we do is from a different perspective, understanding what the viewer's expectations are and speaking to them in a different way than you would if you were making a movie or you were making a TV show.
Help me understand then the creative process. Somebody brings an article to you or maybe a fresh idea and says, listen, Dawn, here's this thing and I think it's a good story. Then do you decide where it goes, how it gets treated? What's your job?
Well, my job is to oversee a lot of talented people who get to really make that determination. But I think what we do is we look at the content that's being brought to us, the stories. And what we've been able to do is develop a deep understanding of what works in terms of storytelling on different platforms. And when I say that, what makes a great movie? What's going to bring people into a movie theater to tell a story to them? Or what makes a great series in terms of scripted series? Like, who are the characters that people would want to come back and see every single week? And for a non-scripted show, you know, what's the situation that people are going to come back for? And in digital video, it goes even deeper than that because the way in which we make content or a video for YouTube is different than what we would make for Facebook or for Snapchat. So it really is a platform by platform, you know, understanding and determination, because people are so interested in being entertained and watching great great storytelling, but yet their state of mind is different depending on the device that they're that they're going to watch the content on.
Well, so how do you do that then, right? Because, I mean, obviously you have to meet people where they are, and I understand that, and we understand that in radio. But it's a different creative mindset to gear something for Snapchat than it is for a 14-part series, right?
That's right. And so, you know, looking at what the opportunity is in any given story, you really have to say, how can we best serve this, you know, this story? Is it going to be best served as a short form idea? And sometimes you start something off in the digital space, which we've done numerous times, and it starts as a short form series. It builds an audience, oftentimes quite substantial, meaning tens and tens of millions of viewers. And then it will migrate on to a longer form platform, be it either an SVOD platform or a network.
SVOD?
Meaning
subscription video on demand.
It's all about understanding what works on different platforms in terms of what is the viewer's mindset. You know, is the viewer ready to really engage in a longer, you know, movie and they have a few hours, or are they looking to sort of binge watch something and really spend hours and upon hours, you know, really delving into a series? Or do they have just a few minutes and they're going to be online and they just want to scroll through their Facebook page, or they're on a train and they're on their way into work, but they have 7 or 10 minutes and they may engage in a YouTube video?
Okay. As you try to meet all those different viewer demands and you go cross-platform or you do whatever voodoo you do, my guess would be your advertising people go bananas because they're like, Dawn, we're trying to sell it here and now you're making us sell it here, and how are we supposed to do this?
And you're right. It's very complex, but at the same time, the advertising community are the ones who are really pushing to meet to find the viewers. I mean, you have to realize that you have the advertising community who, by and large, has spent, you know, a lot of money on television for decades upon decades. And now, you know, digital obviously has come into play over the past, you know, 5 years in particular.
Yeah.
And now when you look at all of the new platforms that are coming up every single year, you know, they want to be where the consumer, where the viewer is. And particularly the younger Gen Z and millennials are consuming now more than 3.5 hours per day on their mobile device. I mean, that's where they're watching video, more than 3.5 hours per day. That's an astounding number when you think about it. It's the new prime time for this generation.
You have four kids, right?
I do.
Do you let them watch TV 3.5 hours a day on their phones? Listen to me, right? Watch TV 3.5 hour day on their phones.
That's ironically, you know, the thing about the phone is they really have more control over the phone and what they do on it than we ever did when people were watching TV kids were watching TV growing up. So you really need to be able to trust their instincts about what they can watch and what they can't watch. You just can't be there all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll tell you, you know, it's interesting because my younger kids really do consume all their content,
yep,
more or less on the mobile device, even,
yep,
if there is a big screen in the room.
Yep. That happens to be on playing something they're interested in.
Yes, yes. But it's, you know.
So I'm sorry to interrupt. Does that make you as a programming person crazy? Does it just drive you bananas?
No. For me, it is a great challenge, and it's exciting. It's exciting as a business executive as well as a creative executive, because when you think about how our viewers are really changing their habits, to be able to create content and innovate in those spaces is really, you know, I think something that is so welcome in the creative community. It really is thrilling to be part of something new that's starting and understand what works and what doesn't work. And it's just being a storyteller in a different way.
Yeah.
From a business perspective, it's really interesting because obviously there are new opportunities and its monetization is coming in so many different from so many different directions in so many different ways,
right.
And that also is, you know, the dynamics of what is not only profitable but in terms of, you know, the costs that are incurred for making content in shorter form content versus longer form content, and then, you know, the ways in which you can resell it and package it,
right,
are, you know, really it's more interesting to be part of something new and to be forging a new path than it is to do things that just feel like it's the same way we've done it,
right,
for so many,
right,
years.
You came from conventional television, like when television was television, the CW and all of that.
Yes, CW and UPN before that,
right,
and Lifetime before that.
You are now managing people who are creating your content in completely different ways. How has that changed how you do what you do? I mean, I imagine you as a TV executive could pluck out a producer and go, do this. And now you have a different challenge.
The challenge now, and obviously we still make television and we make feature films,
yeah,
and we work with the, you know, the creative talent that I've always had the pleasure of working with. But I think what's so interesting now is there is a new generation of talent who are storytellers and who are, you know, directors and writers and producers, and they do have a different vision of how to speak to their,
mm-hmm,
generation. And being a part of discovering who they are and how they really see life, they see life through a different lens than people who are working on the traditional side. They think outside the box. They really do things in an unexpected way from the way you would really develop and produce traditional,
mm-hmm,
content. And so being a part of recognizing that talent for the generation has been quite rewarding. And I have to say, it's made, I think, all the people who work on the traditional side look at things a little bit differently.
Yeah.
I think everybody learns from each other. The people who have been brought up in this short form in this short form medium really looks at people who work in longer form content and says, what can I learn from you, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And so being able to combine the talents within one division have been, I think, very not only useful for us as the producers, but also I think our employees have gotten so much from each other.
When magazine editors at Vanity Fair or New Yorker or whatever title you go knock on the door of inside the Condé Nast Empire, do they cringe when they see you coming, or are they eager to sort of get their stuff out there?
I think people are excited to get their work out there. We've had some success now that we're 5.5
mm-hmm.
years in. So I feel like there's enough confidence that's been built up, which, you know, totally understandable in the beginning. It was, well, you know, how are you going to do this and what are you going to do for me? But in the past 5.5 years, we now have 7 series that are on the air or being produced, and we have 3 films that have been released, and we have another film that will be released this year with 3 more going into production. And I think that what we've been able to achieve speaks volumes. And so people are not as skeptical, and they're
right.
more willing to take a chance.
So you've been doing it for 5.5 years. Look out for me another 5.5. Are we still going to think of Condé Nast as a magazine company, or is it going to be this sort of content conglomerate and empire?
I'm I believe you'll look at Condé Nast as a content company, and that will mean content on many different platforms, distributed in many different ways. The brands and the storytelling, the talent that we have inside of the building really does not only go across many different mediums, but it also is an innate ability to be able to also predict trends, to also be able to be part of what's next, to be able to peek inside and behind the curtain. And it doesn't matter if it's Vanity Fair or The Hive, which is the new vertical from Vanity Fair, which is, you know, incredibly inside Washington and Hollywood and business, or whether it's Vogue and it's understanding trends in fashion, or if it's Bon Appetit and it's talking about food, it is always going to be a company that is about what's new and what's next and how do you get a peek behind the curtain and a look inside. And that's the secret sauce that I think the company overall has, which will really be able to permeate no matter what types of stories we're telling.
What are you reading? How do you stay on top of stuff?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a lot of reading, but yet at the same time, you know, the stories are coming out now all the time on our sites. And so where it used to be where you'd wait for all the magazines to be released and then just, you know, dive into a 2-hour read of Vanity Fair.
Those days are gone.
It's so much more satisfying because now you have so much information coming to you, you know, every minute of every day.
Do you not feel like you're drowning?
I feel like I'm drowning, but yet at the same time, I feel like the relevant pieces seem to rise to the top. You know, you're able to really sort of see what's out there and understand, okay, this is something that, you know, needs immediate read. This is something you could wait for a weekend. Many times we get incoming calls, and so much is going on in the world right now. It is very hard to keep up on many levels. I mean, it really is just an inordinate amount of information and, you know, stories that come out on a daily basis. So you have the benefit of the stories being a little bit shorter, particularly in the digital space. But the deep dives and the real, I think, talent of what so many of our journalists do, which is, you know, having very deep understanding and a different perspective, is what we usually say for print and for the magazines.
Yeah. Now that everybody's on video, do you worry at all about a video bubble? I mean, BuzzFeed has sort of flattened out, and they were, you know, one of the first to do the pivot to video, right? Is that on your mind at all?
It's such an interesting question because it's really the wild, wild west still in the digital video space. Yeah. You know, there is not one business model. Many of these companies are approaching it in different ways. And so when you look at where all of the companies are, it's not apples to apples. I can only speak for us. We have been charged with scaling and profitability at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so we have been forced into a business model where we are able to really drive views, drive scale, but also be profitable. And our digital business, our digital video business, became profitable last year. And we're very, very cautious about not getting too far, you know, out ahead of ourselves. We're really cautious about working on platforms that we really know we can monetize so that we have a very clear understanding of where the revenue is, and really controlling our costs and how much we make and why.
Yeah. How's your stress level?
Stress level?
Yeah.
I think these days the stress level is pretty high, and I think it's high because of, you know, not only, you know, business, but sort of all that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis, you know. It's funny because living in New York, you always have stress no matter what. Just walking outside your door, you're hit with it. But there are so many other issues that I think we're all dealing with that just make everything a little bit harder. But at the same time, you know, it's why you need to have balance in your life. Family life, you know, hobbies, a little time off is really so important these days.
Dawn Ostroff, she is the president of Condé Nast Entertainment. Dawn, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, so that's it. That was Dawn Ostroff, the president of Condé Nast Entertainment. If you like this one, by the way, you might also enjoy my chat with Joanna Coles from Hearst. That one came out in October if you want to dig into the archives a little bit. Coming up this month, we've got a couple of more totally new episodes for you. And then in January, We're going to switch back to doing this thing every other week. If you have strong thoughts on that, for or against, let us know. You can write to us at letters@marketplace.org, or of course, you can leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. This episode was produced by Bridget Bodner. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thanks a lot for listening. Talk to you next week.